Hello and welcome to Wizard Studies.
Join us as we peruse all things Potter. Hello and welcome to Wizard Studies. I'm Katie.
And I'm Audrey.
And today we're going to be talking about my least favorite character in the series, Mr. Gilderoy Lockhart. I kind of talked a little bit about him earlier in the first episode when I talked about how he's my least favorite, so I won't go too in-depth, but just to open the episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about why I hate him so much. So a lot of people, like, pick Umbridge or Voldemort or Snape or Bellatrix as their least favorite characters. And I'm not saying that I like those characters, but Gilderoy Lockhart to me represents somebody who I could actually meet in my day-to-day life. The attributes that he has are attributes that I hate about, like, people in my real life and real surroundings. He's very conceited, which is one of my least favorite things a person could be. And he just thinks so highly of himself, and he holds himself above the rules, like he doesn't have to follow them because he's Mr. Gilderoy Lockhart. And he's such a dick to Harry, like trying to make Harry care more about his fame than he already does. And just, if you go back and read the Chamber of Secrets, he infuriates me so much. Every time he opens his mouth, I just roll my eyes and want to scream at him. So he's by far the most infuriating character that is in the series.
You're such a Hufflepuff.
Saying
that reminds me that I had my roommate, since we last recorded, I had my roommate, my sister, and my mom all take Pottermore, because for some reason none of them had. And my mom and my roommate both got Hufflepuff.
Woo woo!
So, got some people in your house. And my sister got Gryffindor.
Ooh, interesting. So,
yeah. Just a little fun fact about my friends.
Speaking about sorting, I like saw something on Facebook. I don't know if it was from like which Harry Potter group I follow on Facebook, but somebody had posted something that like she sorts her students into houses on, like, because she's a kindergarten or first grade teacher or something, and she sorts all of her students on the first day of class, and so she can clearly see how like each of the houses are shown in these young kids at school. I just think that's super cool.
I saw that. I thought that was so cute.
I suck at sorting people, though. I'm never very good. I never can guess right. It's a real flaw.
I guessed incorrectly for my sister. I thought she would be Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. And my mama, I was, like, pretty sure Hufflepuff, but she could be a Ravenclaw a little. Mm. And then my roommate, I was like, for sure, she's a Hufflepuff. And then I, like, watched her take the quiz, and it was, like, so obvious by all her answers. So, anyway, shout out to Nikki.
My
mom and my sister.
They're not as important. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Nikki, I know, listens more. I'm not sure about the other two, so.
One of my, like, best friends, I made all my roommates take the sorting quiz one night, and I was convinced, like, she didn't scream out to me as any of the houses, but I had come to the conclusion that she was a Hufflepuff. Mm-hmm. Or not a Hufflepuff, sorry, Ravenclaw. I don't know why I said that. I'd come to the conclusion that she was going to be a Ravenclaw based on kind of, like, the non-common Ravenclaw traits. She's more creative, more, like, free-thinking, more, like, passionate about what she is involved in. Yeah. You know, not just, like, straight intelligence and stuff.
Just kind of like a Luna character.
Yeah, kind of like a Luna character. And just because none of the other houses really screamed out to me. And so she took the quiz and got, like, Gryffindor or something. I was like, okay, maybe you should take it again. She took it again, got, like, Hufflepuff or something. And then we did the percentage quiz, and Ravenclaw was her lowest percentage.
Oh, my God.
I was like, this is some BS.
I feel like I'm usually decent. But the thing that gets me is, like, you can't judge for sure because it's, like, people's values. So, like, yeah. I feel like I'm pretty good. When people's values match up with, like, the initial, like, persona that they present, I feel like I'm pretty good at sorting. But I don't know. When people, like, sometimes people, like, seem one house and then you get to know them, you're like, oh, they totally value this way more.
Yeah. It's interesting. I love sorting. I think it's so fun. I take the quiz every, like, year, 6 months.
Do you always get Hufflepuff?
Yeah, I've never gotten anything else but Hufflepuff.
Wow.
What can I say?
I don't know if I've ever taken the Pottermore quiz, like, more than once.
I've taken new email addresses to take it again.
I know. It's a lot of work. But every once in a while, I retake the percentages one.
Yeah. That one's a good one. I just always lose that link. Like, I have to refind it every time.
I have it in my notes in my phone.
Okay. Maybe I should do that.
Because of when you sent it to me.
Yeah.
We should post that.
Yes.
All right. So we're going to jump into his fact file on Pottermore. So his name is Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, third class.
I love that that's included in his name.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It's like, and Gilderoy Lockhart, PhD. Like.
Yeah.
So we were able to find some stuff on the meanings of both his first name and his last name, which are pretty interesting. So J.K. has kind of talked about this a little bit in an interview, and she said that she found Lockhart on a war memorial in Scotland, I think.
So yeah, she said, a church in Scotland.
Yeah. She said, I was looking for quite a glamorous, dashing sort of surname, and Lockhart caught my eye on this war memorial, and that was it. And so she says she couldn't find a Christian name to go with that, so a first name. And she says, I was leafing through the dictionary of phrase and fable one night, and I was consciously looking for stuff generally that would be useful, and I saw Gilderoy, who was actually a highwayman and a very good-looking rogue. So that's where she got both Gilderoy and Lockhart. I didn't know what dictionary of phrase and fable is. Maybe I should, but it's like a reference work that has definitions and explanations of different phrases and like famous phrases and figures and like symbols and stuff like that. So I guess it's kind of like a literary nerd's Bible. I don't know. And so then I thought it was kind of funny. She shows Gilderoy, who is a very good looking rogue. And then we know that Gilderoy Lockhart is, of course, described as good looking. And then I was just looking up generally the meanings of the two names. So Gilderoy, people often think it means gilding of the king. So gilding is like covering in gold, like gold tint and stuff. But actually it means son of the redheaded. And it's a Scottish name,
I believe.
Yeah, right? So I think this is really fitting for him because people always like think of him as this amazing, or the wizards in the wizarding world before his big flaw was revealed.
Debunking.
I don't know, flaw. Yeah. His big scheme. They all thought that he was like this amazing wizard, right? He's a golden boy, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, he's not really anything special. He's just like son of the red headache, you know? That's pretty normal, average name meaning that doesn't give him a claim to fame. And then Lockhart is a Scottish name, and it comes from like the occupational name that refers to a sheep or cattle herder. And I think this is also pretty cool because Lockhart, when you hear it, sounds pretty like regal, I think, and pretty fancy, but the meaning is pretty mundane. It's just a sheep or cattle herder. Nothing against sheep or cattle herders, but it's pretty like average. So I think it totally fits with like his character. When we first meet him, he's like this amazing famous wizard, and then you find out that he really is only good at one thing.
Yeah, and just I'm not sure if we talk about this anywhere else in the doc or in the episode, but I think that I could be wrong, but I feel like I read this when I was searching stuff about him. He's the only character in the Harry Potter books that's based off of somebody that J.K. actually knew in real life.
Yeah.
And there was a big hoopla about it because a lot of people thought that it was based on her ex-husband. She's come out and debunked that since then, saying, like, don't think that. That's not true. But apparently there's a quote from her saying that the living model was even worse. So literally, ooh, he would be the last person I'd ever want to meet in my life.
Wow.
Like I said.
Yeah, that goes with your thing. Like, it's totally believable that you can meet a Gilderoy Lockhart, whereas, like, yeah, you're probably not going to meet a Voldemort.
Yeah. No. So, just fun fact.
Is he the only one? Because I thought maybe it was speculation about Umbridge being based on one of her teachers.
Well, so
I never like said that.
Yeah, I've read some stuff about like there's a couple names that she names after people, or like Hagrid being like based off of a biker she met one time. But I do believe that Gilderoy is the only one that's based off of somebody she actually like interacted with and knew.
Oh, like personal level.
Yeah, and there's been lots of speculation. You can find it online about who they think that he was based off of. But yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I get why she wouldn't want it to get out who she
yeah,
modeled him after, because I'd be pissed.
He's so probably figured it out by now.
Yeah, maybe he deserves it. Just
yeah.
So moving on, his birthday is January 26, 1964. Fun fact, that's only 4 days before my birthday. But there is somebody who has a closer birthday to me than Lockhart, so I don't have to
Lily, say that
he's
right?
the closest. Yep, Lily and I share a birthday, actually. So, fun fact. His wand is cherry and dragon heartstring, 9 inches, slightly bendy. Ollivander's writing about cherry wood goes, this very rare... Sorry. This very rare wand wood creates a wand of strange power, most highly prized by the wizarding students of the school of...
The Japanese school.
Sorry, that was... I'm not even going to try to pronounce it again. It's just going to be offensive. The wizarding school in Japan, where those who own cherry wands have special prestige. The Western wand purchaser should dispel from their minds any notion that the pink blossom of the living tree makes for a frivolous or merely ornamental wand, for cherry wood often makes a wand that possesses truly lethal power, whatever the core. But if teamed with dragon heartstring, the wand ought never be teamed with a wizard without exceptional self-control and strength of mind. So, Gilderoy Lockhart does have a dragon heartstring core, which leads me to believe that I don't know if this wand picked him. I think that Gilderoy maybe fudged it a little bit because he wanted a cherry wand, because they're like known to have special prestige, yeah. Like cherry blossoms, very pretty, very outward. Like, I believe cherry wood has kind of this like red hue to it. I could be wrong.
I think it does.
Yeah. So I think that Gilderoy might have kind of forced this connection just because I feel like a lot of this points to not giving it to Gilderoy. I don't think he has exceptional self-control or strength of mind. And it has truly lethal power, which you can kind of connect to his use of Obliviate on people and his... So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that this wand is very suited to Lockhart. So my headcanon is that he kind of forced the connection, because I do believe that I read this somewhere or heard this somewhere that you can buy whatever wand you want from Ollivander's. It doesn't have to be the one that you match with. Like, you can buy any of them. Obviously, you should buy the one that the wand that picks you.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my headcanon. And then the thing with dragon heartstrings, I'm not going to read that whole thing again because I feel like we've said it like 5 times at this point. They're the wands that have the most power. So we could see that. And again, his oblivious charms or curses. I don't remember which one it is.
Charms.
But
it could be a curse, I feel like.
Yeah. They are capable of the most flamboyant spells, which I think is very Gilderoy. And they're most prone of the three cores to accidents, which I think is kind of ironic. I know this isn't the wand that curses him to lose his memory. It's Ron's wand. But I think that's kind of ironic that the dragon heartstring is most prone to accidents. And his life kind of gets ruined by an accident, which he caused, even though it wasn't his wand.
Yeah. All right. So Gilderoy's house is Ravenclaw. Yay. So honored.
He sounds so excited.
As a member of my house. Okay, but seriously, well, anyway, seriously, go Ravenclaw. Stay tuned for our Ravenclaw episode dropping on my birthday. And other thoughts is that, okay, like, I get why he's in Ravenclaw. I mean, what we've like read leading up to this episode is that he is intelligent and like he was smart in school and stuff, but I don't like that he's in Ravenclaw. I don't think any of us like the people that kind of show the bad side of our house.
Name a bad Hufflepuff. Hufflepuff that shows the bad side of Hufflepuff. Maybe Ernie Mac.
Cedric Diggory and Kershaw.
Oh no, not Ernie Mac. Who's the one that's Zachariah Smith? Never mind.
Yeah, and Cedric Diggory and Kershaw.
Hey, okay, that doesn't count.
It's canon.
Yeah, but it, like, that didn't actually happen, though.
But it could have.
But it didn't.
Okay, anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it's I mean, anytime there's someone bad in your house or someone generally disliked or that you just personally don't like in your house, it kind of like shows the negative traits and potential flaws that you personally could have. So I don't know how Slytherins deal with this, but I think that I do agree that Ravenclaw is probably the best fit for him. But I kind of went through the whole thought process of like, what if he were a Slytherin? Because I thought Gryffindor, no, he's pretty cowardly. Like, we see that when they go into the Chamber of Secrets. Hufflepuff, no, because he's, like, a liar. And I feel like Hufflepuffs wouldn't lie to the extent that he lies.
Yeah.
But based on how he will do anything to get fame, I could make the Slytherin argument, because that's ambition, right? Like, he wants the fame. He has ambition and has things that he wants in life and probably believes that the ends do justify the means.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that it's a little bit of a paradox, because ambition usually pairs with being hardworking, I think. That's how we usually think of it. Being hardworking, or at least being the cunning type of Slytherin that, like, doesn't necessarily have to be hardworking, but can kind of trick your way into getting what you want. But Lockhart is just lazy. Like, what he does isn't particularly cunning. And he obviously doesn't work hard. He just travels around and obliviates people. So he does have ambition, but possibly it's not enough to motivate him to actually feel like he wants to work for what he wants. So I guess we do end up, after going through that thought process, we do end up with him in Ravenclaw, but I think his secondary house would be Slytherin.
Yeah, I agree. And in some of the research I was doing on him, I mean, I have no idea where I saw this. I clicked on so many websites that just, like, had him in the title of their articles. But somebody had said something along the lines of, we're in the houses for the things that we value. And I do think that Gilderoy does value intelligence and knowledge over the things that the other houses value. So I do think that Ravenclaw is the best fit for him. Like you said, it just kind of shows the flaws that people can have if they're in Ravenclaw. I don't, like, not all Ravenclaws have these flaws by any means, but
I'm a scam. Somebody, I haven't somebody worked hard in a day in my life.
Yeah, I do all the notes for the episode. Just kidding. Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense that he's in Ravenclaw. And going back to my note about there not being a bad Hufflepuff, I think that the flaws in Hufflepuff. Wow, Hufflepuff. I think that, like, kind of the bad person in Hufflepuff could be very, I don't know, kind of like lazy.
The duffer.
Yeah, kind of the duffer. They're just like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, Hufflepuff is kind of the leftovers to some extent. I mean, that's kind of what Hufflepuff is. It's somebody who's not too brave, but is kind of brave. It's somebody who is smart, but doesn't value wisdom as their highest.
Yeah.
You know, it's somebody who is ambitious, but, like, works within the rules. You know, it's kind of the leftovers in a sense. And super proud to be that, because Hufflepuff is the best, but that's what it is.
I think, and we can get more into this on our Hufflepuff episode, mm-hmm. but I think because Hufflepuff is, like, kind of their number one trait, or one of their main traits is loyalty.
Yeah.
That's, like, a trait that relates them to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other traits, like intelligence, bravery, and ambition, are self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
So because Hufflepuffs are, like, loyalty, I think they're loyal. They'll kind of do anything it takes for the people that they care about. So whether that be, like, being really brave or being ambitious. I think that they can have all these other traits, but it's the fact that they're doing them, like, for other people or something.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You're just so self-sacrificing.
What can I say? if anybody, obviously this is coming out way after we posted this on our Instagram story, but we had, like, posted something on our Instagram story where we had taken a quiz on BuzzFeed, and we posted kind of what each of us had gotten on that quiz. It was, like, a combination of two characters. And speaking of how I'm self-sacrificing, I think both of the characters that we got, I got, like, Sirius and Snape, which are kind of two characters. Snape, I have real problems with. Sirius is okay. So I was, like, not too excited when I got that. But the description is very Hufflepuff-esque, and the person who, or the combination that you got, I can't remember what it was.
Hermione and Remus
was a very Hufflepuff or Ravenclaw description. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, That's us.
Okay, coming back to Lockhart, we seem to be getting very off topic today. His hobbies listed on his Pottermore profile are autographing photographs of himself and relentless self-promotion. I think that we could take a lesson from Lockhart in self-promoting our podcast, because I don't think either of us are very, very good at it. So, now we're going to talk about his first mention in this series. It is in the Chamber of Secrets when Harry, Ron, and Hermione are at Diagon Alley trying to pick up... Diagon Alley. Diagonally. Picking up school supplies. So I'll just go ahead and read. It's kind of a long excerpt, but I figured that I wanted to capture people's reactions to the man, the myth, the legend, Lockhart. So, Gilderoy Lockhart will be citing copies of his autobiography, Magical Me, today, 12:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. We could actually meet him, Hermione squealed. I mean, he has written almost the whole book list. The crowd seemed to be made up of witches around Mrs. Weasley's age. A harassed-looking wizard stood at the door, saying calmly, "Please, ladies, don't push there. Mind the books now." Harry, Ron, and Hermione squeezed inside. A long line wound right to the back of the shop where Gilderoy Lockhart was signing his books. They each grabbed a copy of the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 2, and sneaked up to the front of the line, to where the rest of the Weasleys were standing with Mr. and Mrs. Granger. "Oh, there you are. Good," said Mrs. Weasley. She sounded breathless and kept patting her hair. "We will be able to see him in a minute." Gilderoy Lockhart came slowly into view, seated at a table surrounded by large pictures of his own face, all winking and flashing dazzlingly white teeth at the crowd. The real Lockhart was wearing robes of forget-me-not blue that exactly match his eyes. His pointed wizard hat was set at a jaunty angle on his wavy hair. And then later we see him kind of schmooze with Harry, try and get in his good graces, try and use him to up his own standing, use him to get even more publicity for him, take pictures with him, and just all around be very annoying.
Isn't it like in when Harry sees those pictures in the Daily Prophet, is this what the picture where, like, photo Harry is, like, trying to get out of the picture?
I think so, yeah. When he, like, sees it, Gilderoy is, like, moving closer to him, and he's, like, trying to move away.
That's so funny.
But, yeah, so in this first meeting, we can already kind of tell, I mean, through the quote that I just read, Gilderoy Lockhart doesn't even say anything, and I think we already get a very good picture of the kind of person he's going to be. Yeah. We also see Hermione and Molly kind of act like schoolgirls, which, I mean, Hermione is around Lockhart. They're both
we're excited to see him.
And, I mean, Mrs. Weasley, she has 7 kids. Like, she needs a break.
So hard.
Yeah, she works so hard. And
she needs guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I don't think that Kenneth Branagh is really that attractive in the movies. If he was a little bit more attractive, I might like Lockhart a little bit more. But, I mean, I think in the books he's supposed to be, like, incredibly handsome, so.
Who would you pick to play Lockhart?
Ooh, long, wavy, blonde hair. You're putting me on the spot. Maybe we'll have to come back to that.
Yeah, I said it and I realized I didn't have an answer.
Because also, I feel like Kenneth Branagh was almost a little bit on the older side from what I would have liked to play him.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of, like, a middle-aged but, like, younger actor.
I feel like
Darren
really
Criss would actually be pretty good at it. Like, kind of keeping in the Harry Potter family. Dye his hair. Like, he's got wavy hair. Get it blonde. He could also play, like, Lockhart really well. He's very good at being exuberant or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's, like, extremely good looking. Sorry if anybody really likes Darren Criss. I think he's, like, good looking, you know? I mean, he's definitely got movie star looks, for sure. You know, he's not an average Joe by any means. But yeah, maybe if I come up with a better answer, I'll say it later. But he's the first one that pops into my mind as of right now. And so, yeah, basically, I don't know if we're going to talk about this anymore, maybe a little bit when we talk about how Lockhart was as a teacher, but this is kind of the first instance, and in my opinion, kind of really the only instance where we kind of see Hermione be a teenage girl, you know, a 12-year-old girl who's in love with the teacher.
until Ron dating Lavender, and then she's a full-on 16-year-old. Oh, okay,
that's true. And, I mean, I guess, like, a little bit with Crumb. I think she's a little, like,
but, smitten. But, like, she kind of hides it with Crumb.
Yeah, no, she hides it really well with Crumb, but yeah. I think she's a little smitten.
This is definitely the first time we see her, we get reminded, like, this girl is 12 years old.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's probably, maybe, I think it's a good introduction, because I think giving her, not that Gilderoy is, like, a love interest by any means, but as an 11-year-old girl, like, it's a good slide where, like, in this one, she's kind of, like, ooh and ah about Lockhart. And then the fourth one, she's got Crumb. And then the sixth one is all just a big mess. And then
her husband.
Then her husband. Then, boom, babies. That's exactly how it goes.
Rose and Hugo. Boom, boom.
Okay, also, I don't know why, but I was thinking that we need to refer to Rose as RGH from now on. No, RGW. Rose Granger Weasley, yeah, RGW.
Oh, like RGB?
Yeah, like RGB. That's what I was thinking. She's just going to be known as RGW from now on.
A side note, have you seen the, like, SNL skit where I think it's Kate McKinnon is going, like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg? That's been stuck in my head lately. So when you just said that, I was just thinking, like, Rose Granger Weasley. Rose Granger Weasley.
No, Kate McKinnon playing Ruth Bader Ginsburg on, like, the Weekly Update. Is that, God, that's my favorite segment of the show. Is, like, one of my favorite things. She's like, you've just been Ginsburg.
It's great. Wait, I have to interrupt. We're just way off topic, so I feel like before I go to the next section, we should do a little shout out. Because our friend, Zeta, just commented on our Instagram, and Zeta was, like, the first supporter of this podcast.
She was there at the birth of the podcast.
She was there at the birth of the podcast. So, shout out to you, Zeta, our Gryffindor friend. We didn't give you a shout out during the Gryffindor episode, so here it is.
We love you and miss you.
Yeah. Come visit one of us, please.
Or both. Well, just or all both. Three of us. We'll have to get together.
All right. Anyway. So, what I've been using so far for Myers-Briggs personality types was just, like, this, like, post that had assigned, like, the 16 personalities to 16 different characters, and Lockhart wasn't on that. So I was like, all right, I'm going to have to kind of come up with something on my own. And I was thinking, and then I just Googled, like, Gilderoy Lockhart MBTI, and this amazing website came up called the MBTI Database, and people, like, vote for what they think the character's personalities are, and you can see, like, oh, like, he got 100% E or whatever. I don't know. I'm just making this up right now. But, yeah, so I thought it was really cool because it takes, like, fans' votes, and so they have it for, like, they have almost every Harry Potter character from the series, and I just thought it was really cool. So I'm probably going to be using that some from here on out.
Side note, just for reference, the previous reference that you had been using, the assigned characters, Fred and George Weasley are the ones that are assigned to this personality type from there. So they'd be in the same. They'd be together if we go off this one.
So keep that in mind, and we'll reanalyze this personality type when we do the twins.
Yeah, but I'm excited to do the twins.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so this personality type for Lockhart is ESFP, so that's extroverted, sensing, feeling, perceiving, and this is dubbed the entertainer. So the first paragraph on 16 personalities about it says, if anyone is found to be spontaneously breaking into song and dance, it is the ESFP personality type. They get caught up in the excitement of the moment and want everyone else to feel that way too. No other personality type is as generous with their time and energy as ESFPs when it comes to encouraging others, and no other personality type does it with such irresistible style. So this is, like, kind of true. Lockhart definitely gets caught up in the excitement, and I could see him spontaneously breaking into song and dance, but he doesn't really do the, like, generous with their time, encouraging others part. He just does everything for the attention. Moving on, some of the other things that jumped out as being totally Lockhart. Born entertainers, ESFPs love the spotlight. They love putting on a show for their friends too, chatting with a unique and earthly wit, unique and earthy wit, soaking up attention and making every outing feel a bit like a party. Soaking up attention, full-on Lockhart. and I feel like he'd, like, if he wasn't so annoying, he would make it feel like a party, but I would get annoyed with him.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was interesting. It talks about being a little bit witty in conversation, which is definitely a Ravenclaw trait. So maybe there's a little bit of that coming through, even though his wit is always, like, referencing back to himself. Mm-hmm. And then for their style, ESFPs have the strongest aesthetic sense of any personality type. From grooming and outfits to a well-appointed home, ESFP personalities have an eye for fashion. Knowing what's attractive the moment they see it, they aren't afraid to change their surroundings to reflect their personal style. They are naturally curious, exploring new designs and styles with ease. So Lockhart is always looking flashy. And I think, I feel like wizards don't really express their style. Everybody just kind of, it seems for the most part, and at least at Hogwarts, everybody wears solid dark robes or something. So even if you don't think that Lockhart's forget-me-not blue robes are attractive, I mean, he does kind of like have this fashion sense where he really portrays himself in his fashion.
Yeah, I just have two quick things about that. Number one, Lockhart's favorite color is the lilac. That is always a trivia question if you go to Harry Potter trivia, so you're welcome. Side note two, in Katie's Hogwarts Mystery update.
Oh, my God.
Whenever you... So there's a character in Hogwarts Mystery. His name is Andre, and he's really into fashion. And so whenever you, like, talk, you can go and, like, have a meal with them and, like, get character points. And the more you level up on the character, you get gems or you get energy or whatever. One of his questions is, like, name a fashionable wizard. And Gilderoy and Albus Dumbledore are the two correct answers.
Albus, because of those three-piece suits and Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald.
Damn.
Oh, okay. God.
End of my interjection.
Okay. I like that you always bring us up to date on...
Oh, yes. Also, I'm going to update you about, like, 2 months too late, but I did become an anime guest, and I became an eagle.
Was that, like, that was what you thought it was going to be because of that icon?
Yeah, but you could be a cat, a dog, or an eagle. And I'm not a huge cat person, and, like, I like dogs, but I feel like being able to fly, like...
Yeah, that's pretty dope.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool. Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. It was hard work.
I hope you use these powers for good.
So far, I have, I think.
Wait, what year are you in Hogwarts?
I think I'm in fifth year right now.
Okay. Getting old.
I know. They keep giving me more things to do. So it's like almost becoming too overwhelming because there's too many things to do when I log on. Because there's that storyline where you progress, like, in the thing. But then there's also those limited time ones, like the Animagus quest, where you have to complete it within a certain number of days. But then there are also these, like, side quests that I'm assigned. So right now I have 3 side quests, right? And I'm just, like, I'm so stressed out. I almost don't want to continue to do this because it stresses me out too much.
Are you dating Bill Weasley yet?
No, it's okay. That's another problem I have with Hogwarts Mystery. So one of the things is, like, you can go to the Celestial Ball. That was one of the limited time only quests. And I really wanted to go with Bill or Charlie, but those were the only two people who weren't an option. So I had to go with freaking Barnaby. It was like the options were either Barnaby, Penny, Andre.
Oh, I remember Penny. Like, I wanted to date Penny.
Like Ismelda or Marula. Like, they were
wait,
like,
isn't Marula mean?
Yeah. Like, they just, like, I really just wanted to go with Charlie or Bill, and they wouldn't let me. The game would not let me.
Maybe because that would throw off, like, canon.
Not, what if you Charlie trying to and marry I could just Bill? Date. We know nothing about Charlie's personal life. For all we know, I could be married to him.
Okay.
Sorry, I just got real heated.
All right. So back to Gilderoy Lockhart. So ESFP's strengths are that they are bold, original, have good aesthetics and showmanship, practical, observant, and have excellent people skills. Aesthetics and showmanship, we just talked about that, definitely spot on. And he's very bold, And I would say excellent people skills, considering he, like, fooled everyone for how many... I don't even know how many years it was. Many years.
I don't know, yeah.
I would, like, practical in a... Practical, probably not. He's not very practical. But observant, I could be convinced on that, because I think he needs to be observant to be able to keep up his facade. He needs to, like, read the room. And then for weaknesses, there's sensitive, conflict-averse, easily bored, poor long-term planners, and unfocused. And I kind of have this headcanon. I don't know if... I think this might... This could be contradicted by actual canon. But I have this headcanon that, like, Lockhart... Going off the, like, poor long-term planner weakness, I have this headcanon that Lockhart sold a book deal and was like, I did this amazing thing. And that was just how he got the book deal. Mm-hmm. And then it was coming time for him to have written the book. And he was like, crap, I haven't done anything amazing. Like, I haven't banished the banishee or whatever. And so due to his procrastination and poor long-term planning, thinking that this was going to, like, not knowing that this was going to bite him in the ass, he just went and stole someone's story. And then he was like, damn, that was so easy. And so he just decided to do that for all his future books.
Hmm. I like that.
So don't procrastinate.
That's all I do.
Or say that you can do things that you can't. Don't fake it till you make it. Or you'll end up like Lockhart. I don't... That's bad advice, but... just don't be arrogant. And then the final tidbit was about their careers. And it said that just about any career that focuses on working with others is a good fit for ESFPs and is even essential for them to be happy and productive. Which I guess you could technically say that stealing other people's accomplishments was working with other people. Because he had to interact with other people to get those stories. So I'm going to buy it on that.
I can see it. I can see it. So this episode is going to be outlined a little bit differently than our past character episodes have been. It's not going to be too different, but just a little bit. We're mainly just going to go through his life, because JK does have a great writing on him on Pottermore where it kind of just chronicles his whole life. So we're just kind of going to kind of go through that and then go on to the pop quiz as we normally do. So I'm going to start out with his childhood. He was born... He's a half-blood. He was born to a Muggle father and a witch mother. He had two older sisters, I believe, and both of them ended up being squibs. So he was very much the shining star of his family. His mother very obviously loved him more than the other two daughters, which can be very damaging for everybody involved, Gilderoy and his sisters. And then, kind of like I said, he, from a young age, he was basically treated like he was the best and he deserved the best. And this I kind of connected a little bit to Draco, just because I think they were raised in kind of a similar way. And I think they're both products of their environment. I definitely am not defending Lockhart by any means, but if you grow up every day of your life as a kid being told that you're the best and you deserve the best and basically better than everybody else, I mean, that's obviously going to change how you see yourself and how you act and how you do things.
I mean, we're all products of our environments.
Yeah.
And we are constantly reminded of this with characters in Harry Potter. So.
Yeah. So I think it's very interesting that JK did decide to just go ahead and give him a backstory that does make him a little bit more sympathetic.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any more sympathy for him, but now at least I understand him, you know, and I think that's one of the beauties of the Harry Potter series and of J.K. Rowling, is we have so many backstories on so many characters that we understand why they are the way that they are. We don't just have to accept them as they're written in the books. Like, we go back and we know why they are the way they are.
Right.
Which is just very interesting. So moving on to his life at Hogwarts when he was a student. He showed up expecting to be the best and to be treated... I think there's even a quote in the writing where he basically expected the greeting that Harry Potter got when he showed up to Hogwarts. He expected people to line the halls when he walked by and clap for him. And basically, he's just delusional. And it turned out that nobody really knew who he was and his accomplishments and his... He wasn't really that extraordinary.
Everybody was magical.
Yeah. I think that's obviously, again, a product of his environment. He was the only magical one out of his siblings, so he was like, oh, I'm special. But this is a school for magical people, so everybody is magical. So you're not special because you can do magic.
I like this quote. Are you going to read this?
You can read it.
I was just going to read the last sentence.
That's why I included the quote from the last sentence.
It says, his talents were unexceptional and nobody was particularly impressed by his naturally wavy hair.
I think that people should be impressed by naturally curly and wavy hair. Come on.
Yeah, I am impressed.
Thank you. I have curly hair in case...
In case you don't follow our Instagram.
Yeah, which you should, because we still haven't, as of the recording date, we have not reached 100 followers yet. So nobody's getting any candy from the wizarding world.
Because this is being released in like a month.
Yeah. So hopefully we will have reached 100 and we've already picked a winner. But there might be more giveaways. Yeah. I do have another giveaway in mind as of right now. So still follow us. He did not have above average intelligence. But he was intelligent. He did have above average intelligence, hence him being in Ravenclaw. And we're going to talk a little bit. One of the last sections of this is based on another Pottermore article that's about him that kind of just goes through his strengths, quote unquote. But he did not work very hard. He was really lazy, which Audrey kind of already talked about. And so the teachers really didn't like him, and neither did his fellow students. The teachers didn't like him because he was a pest and he thought he was good, but he was lazy. And he wouldn't really, I think there's a quote in there that says he wouldn't work at anything where he wasn't going to be the best at. If he wasn't going to win, then he wasn't going to try, basically. So, and his fellow students didn't really like him either because he was very boastful and just all around annoying, which we see in, when he's an adult as well. He apparently told his fellow students that he was going to succeed in making the Philosopher's Stone before he left school. He was going to be the captain of England's Quidditch team and lead them to World Cup glory. And then right after that, he was going to become the youngest minister for magic in history.
Fun fact, England... Quidditch team has never won a World Cup.
Wow, I don't think I knew that.
I thought we talked about that. Maybe I'm wrong then. I'm gonna look this up. England Quidditch.
He did play Quidditch though, so it's not entirely unfeasible that he would be on the World Cup team. He was a seeker. He uses that as a way to kind of ingratiate himself with Harry, who is also a seeker.
Yeah, I don't think they've ever won.
Oh, okay. While at school, he tried to convince Dumbledore to create a school newsletter so that he could see his name in print, which is just, again, reasons why I hate him, reasons why he's my least favorite character. And then another reason he's not very popular with his fellow students, other than the fact that he makes claims that everybody knows will not happen and will not be true. He was famous for his stunts that he would pull, his ridiculous stunts that he'd pull to get attention. A couple of them are he magically carved his signature into the Quidditch pitch in 20-foot-long letters, which I feel like is very interesting, him being a Quidditch player, because in the fourth book, when the Quidditch pitch is all ruined and all hedgy for the maze, Cedric and Harry are like, oh, why would you do this to our Quidditch pitch? They're like aghast that they would do anything to it. And him like being a Quidditch player kind of does that to the pitch himself. That just like made me think of that part in Goblet of Fire. He also projected a massive photo of his face over the school that was very Dark Mark-esque. And one Valentine's Day, he sent himself 800 Valentines, which caused such a pileup in the Great Hall that they had to evacuate it because there were so many feathers and owl droppings that people just had to leave. I don't even know what to say at these things. Whatever. Like, can you imagine being at Hogwarts at the same time as Gilderoy Lockhart and having to put up with this shit? I would be so angry. And he would be in the house with him. Everybody would be like, oh, haha, you have Gilderoy.
Yeah, it'd be really annoying. Mm-hmm. But like, if I had to interact with him on a daily basis, it'd be really annoying. But it would be really funny. I feel like waking up and being like, what the fuck did Gilderoy do this year? Like, what did he do this time? Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that would be pretty comical. If I was a few years younger than him or a few years older and didn't have to interact with him, even if I was in the same house, you know, even being in the same house.
Yeah.
But. All right. Moving on. So, after Hogwarts, he very quickly started to become famous for all of his many feats, like doing away with dark creatures and saving villages. And some of the professors thought they may have misjudged him. They were like, oh, maybe this kid was more competent, less lazy than we thought he was. But of course, we know that he wasn't actually achieving any of these things. He was just stealing credit with some hardcore plagiarism. So I don't know, if he had done this at Hogwarts, would he have gotten kicked out? And he was performing memory charms on the people that actually did this so that he could take credit. So I just have this little quote from JK's writing about this that I feel like is pretty revealing. It said, he had never been a bad wizard, only a lazy one, and he had decided to hone his talents in one direction, memory charms. By perfecting this tricky spell, he had succeeded in modifying the recollections of a dozen highly accomplished and courageous witches and wizards, allowing him to take credit for their daring exploits, returning to Britain at the end of each adventure with a new book ready for publication, which retold his feats of bravery with a wealth of invented detail. I just, like, thought while I was reading this, I wonder if he wrote the books.
Yeah.
That seems like too much work for him. Do you think he, like, made the people write the books and then... Did he have a ghostwriter that he obliviated?
I don't know. I think he... I don't think he wrote them. Okay, never mind. I'm going to restart that statement. He either got somebody else to write them, or the people who he stole the stories from just had such extensive notes and stuff. He just took the notes and, like, kind of compiled it into a book. You know what I mean? Mm. Or he had somebody just ghostwrite or made them write. I don't think that he put in that much work to it. Yeah. That would be my answer.
All right. Well, then I'm just going to read off some of the books that he wrote. Some really great alliteration here. We've got Break with a Banshee, Gadding with Ghouls, Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests, Holidays with Hags, Magical Me, an autobiography, Marauding with Monsters, 101 Practical Uses for Bertie Bott's Every Flavor Beans, Travels with Trolls, Voyages with Vampires, Wandering with Werewolves, Who Am I, which I would assume is another autobiography, and Year with the Yeti. This feels like, you know, those alphabet books that are like, Y is for Yeti. Like, that's what it feels like.
Is it like Sue Grafton, I think, who writes those? My mom writes them.
I have no idea.
But I could be wrong, but you reading Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests, is that what they use in book 5 when they're cleaning out 12 Grim Old Place?
I think
it's what they use when they're like trying to get rid of like the doxy eggs and stuff. Yes, Molly is referencing Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests, which is interesting because then they go to St. Mungo's. So it's like probably I could be wrong, but I think that they use that book and then later they go and like meet him again in Order of the Phoenix. So
no, they definitely use it then. I was thinking that they used it when they, what are the gnomes, when they get the gnomes out of the burrow. But I think, I think you're right. I think Mrs. Weasley has it open during that whole montage.
JK probably just includes that to bring up his name again because we're going to meet him later in that book.
And it's been three books.
Such a genius, that woman.
She's so smart. Also, side note, how on earth could there be 101 practical uses for Bertie Bott's Every Flavor Beans?
I really have no idea.
I just want to know, like, 5 of them.
Yeah. Eat.
Eat. Like, prank your friends.
Yeah, prank somebody.
Okay, we got 2. 99 to go. Stay tuned for us coming up with more.
Yeah. It's going to be a new segment. Every episode, we're going to come up and announce another use.
But they have to be practical uses, too.
I think practical is subjective.
That's true. All right, well, so as we know, Gilderoy was really good at memory charms. That's the only thing that he was good at. So I kind of went a little bit in detail on what memory charms are. So the incantation is Obliviate, and obviously it's a charm. The purpose of the memory charm is to erase or modify the memory of another, and the effect is that the recipient will lose a portion or all of their memory, depending on how strong the spell is. Pretty straightforward, pretty self-explanatory. The famous moments we get from the series, pretty much all Lockhart and Hermione. So I wonder if Hermione, like, even after all of the stuff with Lockhart came out, I wonder if she still was a little bit, had a little girl crush on him.
I think so,
schoolgirl crush.
Yeah.
Famous moment, Lockhart, like, rebounding, and then Hermione obliviating her parents, which is the most heartbreaking thing.
So devastating. The scene in the movie where she starts to, like, disappear from all of the pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's terrible.
My heart.
I remember seeing that and just, like, immediately start. I was already, like, emotional because it
No, it's this. Already, like, the first 15 minutes of the movie.
It's literally,
or
like, right at the beginning. I remember just starting crying.
Oh, man.
And then also Hermione used it on a lot of Death Eaters during the hunt for the Horcruxes, and also on Xenophilius Lovegood when they were running away because he called the Death Eaters on them. So then history of the memory charm. I don't know how to say the first name of the woman who developed them. It's like Anemone?
Anemone?
Like anemone. Anemone?
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's M-N-E-M-O-N-E. Bradford is her last name. She was the first to develop them. And she was, like, subsequently the first to be a ministry obliviator. So, like, pretty much right away they were put to use by the ministry. And the ministry has historically used obliviate on many muggles to keep the international statute of secrecy. So the Minister for Magic, Audeline Gamble, he was the one that set up the Hogwarts Express and to get students to Hogwarts. And the project took so much work and was in so huge that they had to perform 165 memory charms on muggles to make them forget that. And it was the largest, they have the largest ever concealment charm in Britain. And I assume that's to hide platform 9 3/4 and to, it probably like goes along the whole track, I would assume. And then in Fantastic Beasts, we see Makuza using Obliviate or intending to use Obliviate on Nomadges, because we know from Fantastic Beasts, like the tensions between Nomadges and wizards is even like higher than the in the US is even higher than the tensions between muggles and wizards in Britain during Harry's time. So many muggles also have seen the so many muggles have seen the Loch Ness Monster that the Ministry of Magic has been unable to perform memory charms on all of them. Ooh. So I like when there's like little things that we are like phenomena in the in our world that we can credit to the Wizarding World. I just thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And also, fun fact about the memory charm, not so fun fact, I guess, is that it seems like the only way it can really be broken is through torture. So, like, Voldemort and Pettigrew were able to break the one on Bertha Jorkins to learn about Crouch Jr. But basically, they had to torture her so much that she just died after.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of has to do with what I'll talk about later and Lockhart being in St. Mungo's and not being able to be cured.
Yeah.
So because of those memory charms, he received a lot of accolades for his success. He got an Order of Merlin third class, and that's the Orders of Merlin are awarded by the Wizengamot. I never know how to say that.
Wizengamot? I say Wizengamot, but I've also heard, like, Wizenagamot.
Wizenag.
Which, like, there's not a second A.
Yeah, but is after the G.
Yeah, I pronounce it Wizengamot. Yeah.
So that is... That organization actually predates the ministry, but now it just functions kind of as a court and a parliament, and they're the ones that try Harry in Order of the Phoenix after he casts the Patronus. And then, so the Order of Merlin, you can get first, second, or third class. First class being the best, third class being the worst, but it's still quite the honor. So first class gets a golden medal on a green ribbon, and it's thought that, like, green is for Slytherin because Merlin was a Slytherin. And you get a first class for acts of outstanding bravery or distinction. Do we know if Harry, Ron, and Hermione get Orders of Merlin? I feel like they have to.
I feel like they definitely did.
Anyway. Then the second class, it's golden medal on a purple ribbon. So this is, like, too bad that Lockhart didn't get that because his favorite color is lilac. but you get that for achievement or endeavor beyond the ordinary. And then third class is the golden medal on a white ribbon. And that's for people who have made a contribution to our store of knowledge or entertainment. And that just was interesting to me because I always kind of thought of Lockhart getting the medal because he was doing good work, like ridding the world from dark creatures and stuff. But by this description, it makes it seem like he got it because of his books, which I could see as a contribution to entertainment, or I guess his books are a contribution to knowledge. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like if they were giving him something for the actual deeds, that would be probably a second class or a first class.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. And then the last thing I have on the Order of Merlin is that the Ministry of Magic tends to give out Orders of Merlin to their favorites, or the Wizarding Amount tends to give it out. Especially like the higher classes more often than like they are deserved. So like there are people that have first classes that don't really deserve them. You can't really dispute the fact that Dumbledore deserves his first class because he defeated Grindelwald. But a lot of people were like, skeptical when Cornelius Fudge awarded himself a first class for his career. His career wasn't even that great.
Yeah, it's and then another an act of bravery.
Yeah, which
is
exactly.
Like what the first class is.
And then another recipient includes Sirius's grandfather, so Arcturus Black, and he was widely believed to have bought it by loaning the Ministry a large amount of gold.
So. All governments and government agencies are corrupt. Change my mind.
Okay. Strong stance. Don't get too political. And then the last two big awards that we know Gilderoy has gotten are that he's an honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League, and he won Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award no less than 5 times in a row.
Damn, that's impressive.
Charming guy.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk a little bit about his second stint at Hogwarts as a professor. So it has kind of been a long-standing gripe that people have had with the Harry Potter series about why Dumbledore would have hired Lockhart, because it is known that he did already suspect Lockhart before he hired him of stealing other people's stories for his books, because he actually personally knew, I think, at least one or two of the wizards that Gilderoy had obliviated and stolen their knowledge from. So people have always kind of wondered why Dumbledore would do it. And I have a couple reasons. Number one, nobody else applied for the job. Lockhart was the only one. Yeah, Lockhart was the only one. I think I saw something the other day that broke down how many, because it's been cursed since Tom Riddle applied for the job.
Yeah.
So that's like 20 to 30 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like don't have the exact number.
And there are
number,
not that many wizards in the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lockhart was literally the only one who applied for the job. He was the only one that could have gotten it. I mean, Dumbledore probably could have asked for somebody else, as we see kind of in later books with Lupin,
like getting Remus
and then Moody. Yeah. He asked both of them. But Lockhart was the, like, what do you want, Dumbledore? He was the only one who applied. another reason is Dumbledore wanted to use this as a way to expose Lockhart and expose him as a fraud. I mean, you could argue that he's kind of shirking his duties as an educator if that was the reason why.
He always has multiple motives, though.
That's true. It's true. I mean, I'm sure that's a secondary motive. And I think the third motive that I found, oh my God, it just left my brain. Give me 1 second. there's like a quote where he tells McGonagall that you can learn just as much from a bad teacher as you can from a good teacher.
It's literally right in front of me.
I wasn't reading it, okay?
Okay.
Anyways.
Don't need my notes.
There's plenty to be learned even from a bad teacher. What not to do, how not to be, is the quote that Dumbledore tells McGonagall when McGonagall questions his motives. There was a combination of Lockhart applying for the job, and Dumbledore did kind of go out and recruit him for the job. He basically uses Harry as bait, kind of like he does when he gets Slughorn to teach. He's like, oh, but if you come, you can meet Harry Potter and like, connect with him and be his teacher, and you can take credit for his good deeds.
And I think Dumbledore basically, like, had to do this because Lockhart obviously needed something for himself.
Yeah.
He didn't need the job. He didn't need the money. He just needed the claim. And Lockhart, of course, was going to be skeptical once he has to start teaching people. Isn't it going to be revealed that he doesn't know anything?
Yeah. So I don't think he really wanted to be the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher for reasons being he probably was going to get outed. If we think about it, Dumbledore and McGonagall and Snape and some of the other teachers are probably the smartest, best wizards in the entire wizarding community. Yeah. If anybody's going to find out that Lockhart is a fraud, it's going to be them. So. Yeah. There had to be a very large reward for him to want to go to Hogwarts and do this. He, as we know, was not a good teacher. I don't know why you would expect anything more from him. There's a quote. His classes quickly became a charade as he was revealed to be completely inept at everything in which he claimed in his books to be an expert. And then, of course, his teaching tenure does not end well for him. He ends up losing all of his memories and turning into a crazy person, basically. Because he tried to curse Ron. He tried to do the same exact thing to Ron. Yeah. And then it happens to himself. Instant karma.
Can you imagine, though, like, if Ron's memory had been wiped? We really would have changed the series.
Harry wouldn't have defeated Voldemort.
Yeah, without Ron.
Yeah.
Probably right. So, after teaching at Hogwarts for a year, or teaching in the loosest sense of the word, Lockhart ended up in the Janice Thickney ward at St. Mungo's because of the backfiring memory charm. And so when we see him in St. Mungo's during Order of the Phoenix, he, like, tries to sign autographs for Harry and co. And so he's still, like, kind of himself. He still has his personality, but he has no idea why he's famous. And I think it's, like, mentioned that no one comes to visit him. I mean, he's kind of burned a lot of bridges in his life, like, especially with his family. So I don't think there's anyone really that would go visit him. So it's kind of sad. But maybe in JK's eyes, Lockhart slash the person that she based him off of deserves this.
Maybe.
So, like I said, he was in the Janice Thickney ward. So I just thought, okay, I was like, who's Janice Thickney? And I found on the wiki that Janice Thickney was a British wizard who faked his own death in 1973 by saying that a Letherfold ate him by writing a note, and then he wrote a note on his bedside table saying, oh no, a Letherfold's got me, I'm suffocating. Really convincing, but his wife and kids were convinced. Also, a Letherfold is a dark creature that's also called a living shroud. And basically, it just kind of goes around, like, eating people while they're sleeping. So that's, like, that's why it's convincing that he just up and disappeared. There's, like, a quote from the wiki that describes it. And it says, the Letherfold resembles a black cloak roughly half an inch thick and appears slightly thicker if the creature has recently digested a victim. It glides along surfaces in an unknown form of locomotion in search of its prey, humans. It attacks at night when the target is asleep, but by suffocating and then digesting it. And they're mostly found in tropical climates, so don't worry. Letherfold's not going to come get you if you don't live in the tropics. And what's interesting is that Celestina Warbeck's parents met when the man who would become her father saved his future wife from a Letherfold that had disguised itself as a stage curtain during one of her performances. Hmm. So these are, like, sneaky beasts.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Janice Thickney. His wife and kids were mourning him, but then, like, a few days later, he was found living 5 miles away with the landlady of the Green Dragon Pub. So really, what? He was just, like, a cheating bastard, and he faked his own death, and then, like at least, like, move away with the landlady. Don't go 5 miles away.
What? I'm going to make another bold claim. All men are trash. Prove me wrong.
Yikes. That was a lot, Katie. All right. So on the topic of St. Mungo's, I found a Pottermore article That's JK talking about illness and disability in the wizarding world. So it kind of opens where she says she had to decide how wizards would deal with illness and disability. What made them mortal? If they were magical, couldn't they just magic away any sickness, any illness, any disability? Could they get sick like muggles? So she kind of like went back and forth with this for a while, and she decided that wizards can suffer muggle afflictions, but they can be easily cured. So like a common cold, poisonous scorpion, any of that, there are charms, there's like
a broken spells. Arm?
A broken arm, if you're not Lockhart. There's spells to fix that. But they cannot as easily cure magical wounds and afflictions. So this is why Lockhart's memory can't be fixed. It's why Bill's scars from Greyback can't, like, they stay because they're magical. And then Mad-Eye has disabilities, right? I mean, he kind of turns, like, losing an eye into a superior ability, but he lost a leg. So that was likely from a curse or something, and it couldn't be fixed. And then in this article, she brings up lycanthropy, which we talked about on our Lupin episode, and she says it's like Lupin is suffering from a magical affliction, which of course she's using to mimic AIDS and bloodborne diseases, but it can be treated with wolfsbane, so that suppresses the effects and is kind of like antiretroviral treatment that can help with AIDS, but it doesn't completely cure him. So then we also found this Pottermore article that's called Gilderoy Lockhart According to Gilderoy Lockhart. So pretty good way to describe Gilderoy Lockhart is just through his own words. It opens with, he was the fair-haired, blue-eyed wizard who captured the hearts of witches everywhere with tales of valiant deeds. But there was no greater fan of Gilderoy Lockhart than Gilderoy Lockhart himself. Katie is just shaking her head right now. So it just kind of, like, this article just kind of takes quotes from Lockhart throughout the books, or mostly, I guess, Chamber of Secrets, and applies them as skills. So one's like, he knew everything about gardening, and he wasn't exactly modest or tactful about it. And then it's the quote of him telling Professor Sprout how to deal with the Whomping Willow. And then his teeth gleamed for a reason, and he was only so happy to tell anyone who'd listen as long as they knew how brave he was too. Says Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, third class, honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League, and 5 times winner of Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award. But I don't talk about that. I didn't get rid of the abandoned banshee by smiling at her.
While reading that, all I can picture is Kenneth Branagh, like, when he goes, but I didn't get rid of the abandoned banshee by smiling at her. Like, that, like, little laugh that he does.
That's
after.
That's really creepy. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of funny just putting all of this in his own words. I mean, it says he had a backup business plan, and that was his secret ambition to rid the world of evil and market his own range of hair care potions, which this is why Hermione got full credit on a quiz.
Yeah. Speaking of the hair care potions, I had been, like, reading a lot about that. Apparently, that was his lifelong passion to create these, like, hair care products. And he created, like, a product. But there was something in it that is, like, really poisonous and, like, bad for people. And so nobody bought it because it's, like, actually harmful for you to use.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Didn't, like, Harry's family make
Slinkyzies?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, you should go check out that Pottermore. It's pretty funny. And then there's the link to, like, the first Defense Against the Dark Arts class with him.
So now we're going to move on to our second to last section. We're going to talk about, where is he now? He is still at St. Mungo's. He never gets any visitors. Audrey already mentioned this. His family never visited him, and kind of, like, he gets fan mail, and it's quoted. It says that he doesn't really know why he gets the fan mail, but he gets it. So I kind of picture him as kind of like a washed up, like, 80s rocker, where, like, women who had these crushes on him were like, oh my God, it's Gilderoy Lockhart. But everybody else, he's just gone from their minds. He's kind of like One Direction is now to our generation.
Oh, shit.
Like, there's still, like, a couple hardcore fans are like, they're gonna get back together, I love them, and, like, still, like, do all that stuff. But most of us have kind of been like, That was a period of my life. It is now past. Directioner forever. Hashtag. He's never recovered. We see him again in Order of the Phoenix, and this is kind of where we get a lot of his where are they now information. Because the trio plus Ginny run into him, and I actually pulled a quote from when they run into him, which I think is very interesting if we look at it in juxtaposition with his first mentioned quote that I read earlier. It says, he had wavy blonde hair, bright blue eyes, and a broad, vacant smile that revealed dazzlingly white teeth. So a lot of that description is the exact same as we see in the first mention. Literally, his teeth are described the same exact way, dazzlingly white. They talk about his blonde hair, which is mentioned, blonde wavy hair, and they talk about his blue eyes, which is mentioned in the first mention as well, where they say that his eyes perfectly match his, like, periwinkle or forget-me-not blue robes. So I just thought that was super interesting that it's like it came back completely full circle. It is surmised or known, I don't know if this information is supported by JK and whether it's like officially canon, but apparently kind of nobody found out that he was a fraud. It never really became public knowledge that he was, that he stole all of the information in his books and, like I said, was a big fraud. He still gets fan mail almost on the daily from Gladys Gudgeon. I think that's how you pronounce her last name.
Gudgeon.
Like, whatever, it's fine. And then I just kind of wanted to close out this section with the question of, do we feel bad for him? And where his life is. Or was. I don't know if he's still alive, if he's died in canon.
I do. I mean, he kind of had it coming to him, like, karma's a bitch, he oblivioned all those people. But I still have, like, some pity for him, even though I know he did all of that. Like, he's just suffering from what he did to other people. Like, I still feel bad for him. That's not, like, a life that you would really wish on anyone, I don't think.
Yeah, I also think, again, like I said, he's my least favorite character, but I think I still feel bad for him. Like, this is really heartbreaking, especially the fact that nobody visits him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. That's just really heartbreaking to me that he's just going to live out the rest of his life in St. Mungo's, basically kind of living this half-life kind of thing. Like, they talk about how he has to relearn how to write. Like, he can barely write his signature anymore. It's very, like, messy. And granted, he is suffering taste of your own medicine, but I don't think that when he obliviated other people, it was, like, this bad. I think the reason it was this bad is because it was with Ron's wand, which obviously was malfunctioning. So it is sad. And that scene in Order of the Phoenix, I think Ron sees it as very humorous. Like, oh my gosh, can you believe Gilderoy Lockhart is like that? Like, haha. And I think there's a moment where Harry's walking away and he kind of, like, thinks it about it in more of a serious light where he's like, oh, that's actually kind of sad. So it's pop quiz time. We actually have two questions for today. The first one is, if you could obliviate one thing from the book so that it didn't happen, what would you obliviate? And we kind of put a stipulation on it, saying that it can't be so big that it would have, like, changed the course of the book.
So, for example, it can't be, like, Dumbledore doesn't die, because that would change the course of the book.
Yes.
So my choice is that Hedwig doesn't die, because there's no reason for it. I get it, it's like a loss of Harry's innocence a little bit, but Hedwig could have just, like, been safe at the Burrow all during the hunt for Horcruxes, and Hedwig is, like, so important to Harry, and she's a great character, so rip. Didn't happen. Yeah. Have you seen the, like, meme where it's just, like, crossed out? Someone, like, crosses it out. And
they're like, oh, yes,
how it should be. Line.
Yeah. Mine would be that Fred didn't die. Again, like, kind of like Hedwig's death, it happens, and I get that happened for a reason, like, for the whole Weasley family to come out in the end as completely, like, scot-free and nobody dies is kind of, like, I mean, there's 9 of them or whatever. Like, it's kind of unreal. And they were, like, all at the center of the fighting, you know?
Right.
But why couldn't it have been Percy?
Ooh.
No, I like Percy's character arc, and like them reuniting at the very end, right before he dies, is kind of one of the reasons that Fred's death is even more emotional and almost traumatizing.
Better than if Percy had never been able to.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree, but it just like makes that death even more heartbreaking.
That scene is so hard to read.
It is. And
because, you know, it's like a 19-year-old kid.
Yeah. And he had, like, such big things ahead of him. The joke shop was up and running for, what, a year at that point? A year and a half? Ugh, I'm going to cry if we keep talking about this. But Fred is, like, I love the twins. I've talked about them quite a bit. Like, they're part of my, like, group of favorite characters. And I don't think his death would have really changed anything. There is one part where they talk about how Ron is furiously, like, because Harry, Ron, and Hermione are trying to, like, focus on killing Nagini. But after he finds out that Fred dies, Ron becomes so emotionally invested that he, like, tries to go after Death Eaters. He's like, no, I want to kill him. I think that's really the only thing that would have changed if Fred hadn't have died, TBH. Right. And, like, in the 7 books. Obviously, it affects a lot of stuff afterwards. Like, Ron goes to work at Weasley's Wizard Beezes, which I don't think would have happened if Fred hadn't died. George ends up with Angelina, who Fred was dating in high school, which I think it's a little weird, but anyways.
Grief, so, yeah. Man.
Yeah. So the second and last question for the pop quiz we have is kind of more complicated, so I'm going to try and explain it so that you guys, it makes sense. So if you could obliviate something from your mind that happens in the 7 books to give you the chance to read it again, like for as you're reading it for the first time, as if you were reading it for the first time. So to have another big reveal happen, you'd be like, oh my God, didn't see that coming. You know what I mean? Like, what would that moment be that you wish you could reread again as if you hadn't read it before? If that makes sense.
Yeah. So I would obliviate the last, like, I think it's 100 pages or something. Honestly, it's a big chunk of Prisoner of Azkaban. I've talked about this before. I think it's, like, a great reveal. I feel like it's, like, one of the first big reveals you get in the series, and you learn so much. So I would obliviate the whole, like, Shrieking Shack, learning that Sirius isn't the bad guy, learning that Pettigrew is the bad guy and, like, is alive, all of that. I would just totally obliviate, and to be able to reread that again, it's kind of like a cop-out, because then I get to, like, I'm saying I get to reread, like, a big chunk of the 3rd book, but the whole thing, like, going back in time, I love that whole sequence of events. And I feel like, especially because it's the 3rd book, like, I read it when I was so young that I, like, don't remember. I don't remember what it was like when I first read it. And I don't remember ever thinking that Sirius was bad, you know, because I did, obviously, but I don't remember that feeling. So, yeah.
So I tried really hard to pick something not from Goblet of Fire, because I feel like this runny joke has gotten old. But I'm going to pick something from Goblet of Fire. I'm going to pick the reveal that Barty Crouch was impersonating Mad-Eye Moody the whole time. Basically, that whole monologue that he has where Dumbledore is interrogating him, like, how did you leave Azkaban? Like, what have you been doing? Like, did you kill your father? That whole thing is one of, if not the number one reason why Goblet of Fire is my favorite book of all time. So to be able to read that again would be just amazing.
When you read that, do you do the, like, when I reread that, like, from the book, I, like, think of the scene in the movie, and so I, like, see it as, like, him progressively starting to do the tongue thing, like, more and more.
Okay, I have a thing with that tongue thing. So my sister, I would do that to my sister all the time, like, the and my sister hates it when I do it to her, but I do it, like, oh my gosh, it's a moment. Like, again, like, something from the Goblet of Fire that just, like, has ingrained itself into my everyday life. Like, I don't do that every day, but it's, like, a thing that me and my sister do. It's, like, a joke that we have.
It's so funny, and I feel like any, like, Potter fan, like, a fan that's watched the movies, you can do that, and they'll know.
And they just instantly know.
Like, that's a great addition to the movies.
I think so.
Because it, like, gives, it clues in, like, the viewers.
Well, yeah, and if you go back and watch that, he does that before he takes sips of Polyjuice Potion a couple times. Like, I think, like, at least at the Yule Ball, I think he does it right before he, like, does the, like, and rolls his eye back when he does that. Mm-hmm. But I love that so much. Not okay, the tongue-licking thing, but the reveal. It's going to be really weird. Sorry. But yes, you guys all know what I'm talking about.
All right, so apologies for getting a bit off topic, but you made it this far, so congratulations. Go subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. You can download and listen to our episodes. They're released every other Tuesday, bright and early in the morning, Eastern Time, United States. So if you got a commute, there you go. Tuesday commute.
Yes. We also might be changing up our release schedule in the near future from the time where you listen to this episode. So be on the lookout for any surprise reveals that we might have.
A little for summer, the summer months. Summer treat, yeah.
Yeah. You can also find us on social media. You can follow us on, or you can like our page on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. We are Wizard Studies Podcast on both of those platforms. If we haven't reached 100 Instagram follows by the time this episode is released, which I really hope we have, please go follow us. You have the chance to win a goodie. But like I said, I have other goodies and other giveaway ideas for giveaways in mind. And then you could also email us at wizardstudiespodcast@gmail.com. If you have any episode ideas or pop quiz questions, because like we say every week, we struggle to come up with these questions. So,
although we had two today.
Yeah. Overachieving.
Or just email us like anything.
You know? Yeah. Email us and tell us how great we are and how much you love us.
And put that in a review.
Yes, please.
All right. As always, thank you so much for listening. And remember, just do your best. We'll do the rest.
And learn until our brains all rot.